Welcome to Not Work Myth and Storytelling. This is the show where ancestral wisdom meets the modern imagination and our timeless connection to the land itself. Welcome to the seventh season of Not Work Myth and Storytelling. I'm your host, Marisa Gowdy, and I'm so excited to welcome my friend, Robert Mulhall, back to the podcast for a conversation we're calling The Fires of Bjaltana and Eros. But first, I'll share with you a brief story, and Robert and I will share with you a bit of poetry. First, our guest. Robert Mulhall brings two decades of experience in diverse industries, including spirituality, well-being, international development, leadership development, finance, and education. He's passionate about service and deeply curious about how people can facilitate sustainable transformation to enable more peace, justice, and freedom in our world. Robert's career has enabled him to cross the private and public sectors multiple times, working with organizations such as Concern Worldwide, the Gates Foundation, PricewaterhouseCoopers, and Kripalu. Originally from Ireland, Robert has been certified as a CPA, an Irish and Celtic shamanic practitioner, a yoga teacher, a Reiki healer, a meditation teacher, and in the Enneagram. So Robert and I will be reading a portion of a poem by Nuala Ní Gonal called Bladuith. Robert will read to you in the Irish, and I'll give you John Montague's English translation. But before we dive in, I want to anchor us into the myth that inspired Nuala's poem. This story comes from Welsh mythology and the fourth branch of their great collection of tales, the Mabinogi. As you likely know, knot work is deeply rooted in the Irish tradition, but I keep finding that we deepen our roots when we spread our branches. And after all, this is only across the sea. So the story of Bladuith actually begins with another woman, a woman named Arianrhod. She was a mother who denied her own motherhood. She was a woman with her own complicated story, full of her own immensely difficult choices. You'll actually have a chance to hear her story in just a couple of weeks. But for now, let it be known that Arianrhod dictates her son Lugh's fate. And she declares that he shall have no wife of the race that is on earth now. So that sounds as if he's destined to live alone forever without a human wife by his side. But rather than being condemned to that sort of fate, he asks his powerful relatives, the magicians, Math and Gwydion, to come to his aid. And so they do. And they make for him a maiden of flowers. She's made of oak and of broom and of meadow sweet. 9 plants in all. And so Bladuith is born, and she becomes Lugh's bride. But there's just one problem. The love is not there. She does not have love in her flower heart for Lugh. She loved another, a hunter by the name of Gronar Pebar. And they, that new couple, saw only one solution, murder. But Lugh was full of his own magical pedigree, and he was not an easy man to kill. He could only die if stabbed by a certain blessed spear while standing with 1 foot in a bath and 1 foot on a goat. Now, as complicated as this is, the passionate couple, Gronar and Bladuith, were able to convince him to place himself in just such a situation. And so the lover attacked the husband. But in this story, the husband did not die. Instead, Lugh was transformed into an eagle and flew off into the night. And for a time, the new couple, Gronar and Bladuith, lived happily ever after. Until they didn't. Until Lugh and his uncle Gwydion returned to exact their revenge. Gronar was killed. Bladuith was turned into an owl and became a lonely creature of the night. So as sad as that story is, there's magic within it. There's passion within it. There are flowers within it. And I'm going to ask Robert, say welcome to the podcast, Fulcha, to read to us a bit of a poem that inspired the Irish poet Nuala Ní Gonal with her words.
Thanks, Marisa. And you said you invoked the help of me in the reading of the poem, and I'll invoke the grace of others as I read Ascuelga. Ora dispara, dowera, avula orum. Esplohim, Comreac, Kemica, Mahullin, Clauclain, Ismonair, Fair May, E Cotrol, Fuin grain. Abuin fui. Hahal de lov osglian. Malunana. Illa melta. Egan jas. Egsu talun. Ison falker fien. Crowrig is oban. Kuhl is miask nanyas. Ni kostich. Binshin lucra aventium.
Gramila Maigat. And so I'll translate as John Montague did. Bloodwith. At the least touch of your fingertips, I break into blossom. My whole chemical composition transformed. I sprawl like a grassy meadow, fragrant in the sun. At the brush of your palm, all my herbs and spices spill open, frond by frond, lured to unfold and exhale in the heat. Wild strawberries rife and pimpernels flagrant and scarlet blushing down their stems to mow that rushy bottom. No problem. So thank you for coming with me on the first part of this adventure. Let's see where it takes us next. Knotwork is a listener-supported show. And if these stories and conversations mean something to you, then becoming a paid subscriber to the Mythworkers' Hearth over on Substack is the most direct way to keep the podcast going. As my thank you, paid subscribers receive Tourists, a series of special episodes that go deeper into the mythical, imaginal, and physical landscapes at the heart of this work. It's the journey within the journey. As a paid subscriber, you're also invited to join our monthly hearth gatherings, live storytelling, writing, and conversation with fellow myth-minded companions. You can find the link to subscribe to the Mythworkers Hearth in the show notes or visit us at mythworkers.com. So, sort of the roots of this conversation that you and I are having today, right as we're leaning towards Bjaltuna and this festival of fertility and fire, are conversations that we had in March around St. Patrick and Síolann na gCnoic. And we really were getting into some fabulous territory. And it was somehow in the course of that conversation that Irishness and Eros and then the coming of Bjaltuna all wove together. And have opened us up to have this conversation.
And for me, the through line in so much of this is the snake and the story of Patrick and banishing the snakes from Ireland, which we know is not true in any way. Metaphorically, there wasn't a full banishment and there wasn't a full eradication or erasure. But I've brought with us some snake skin from my altar to be with us in this conversation, and that, in the Vedic lineages of the Kundalini and that powerful energy that moves as a snake up the spine, and how much of that is connected to all of our energy that's moving through us, but how is absolutely connected to our Eros also, and our creativity and our passion and our fire and our anger, all things that feel very, to me, very similar, but just the expression is just slightly different each time. I don't know what it's like for you, but growing up in Ireland, Eros was not something that was talked about, not something that was really acceptable. And there's not a lot, it's pretty hard to find writing about it. Mancon did a beautiful job in one of his books, a whole chapter sort of dedicated to some of that language, that old Irish that speaks of the erotic phrases and how connected to nature it is. Actually, how not even connected to nature, how inseparable from nature it seems to be. And I think about that with Bealtaine. You can't celebrate or honor Bealtaine in any way separate from nature and its forthcoming abundance, and that sort of energy of arriving and the energy of arriving and sprouting. And yeah, there's a lot of you could just look at the fields at Bealtaine time and write erotic stories for days.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah, I'm just landing, and as you name that sense of arrival and fertility, right? And I think we get that freneticness with spring sometimes that doesn't allow that space for arrival, that doesn't allow that space to root in to the body, to the earth beneath our feet, to courtship, and that sense that, what as much as, the feeling of falling in love is often just so intoxicating, and it's so easy to lose yourself in the moment and the sensation and everything. And yet it's such a powerful invitation to arrive to yourself and to another. And then, as you say, we get to watch it happen in the fields right now, in the front garden, in the flower box that you've ignored since last year, right outside your window. Oh, what is it like to welcome that energy in?
Yeah. How much of us in this time where, we're both residing on Turtle Island, United States of America, and but really anywhere in the world right now, people are, there's shockwaves everywhere. Everybody's feeling it. And how Eros can just be really dampened in this time. People deprioritize that energy, whether they're in a connection with somebody else or not, or with many people or not. What is it like to keep Eros alive in our lives during these difficult times? And then, that even that setting it up as a like there's an opposite of Eros. I go, is there? What if it's all Eros? What if this whole human experience and beyond human experience is actually an experience of making love to life and allowing love to make life to us, or and even through us. And that any idea of this is Eros and this is not Eros is actually part of like the trap, part of the trap of where Eros actually gets dampened and pushed away. I don't know.
Those are some powerful words there, Robert, that we certainly were not raised to put upon our lips and say, what if it's all the erotic? What if it is all the great union? What if we all came from that level of energy rather than assuming, I don't know, we pop from our father's heads to again work with the Greeks?
Can I read you a poem I wrote?
Would you? Please.
It's on a book with an owl cover, which I
Of
think is
course,
good for
of
the
course.
exactly, of course. So I wrote this about 2 years ago. Yeah, 2 years ago, just around the alternate time. And I've not shared it in this way. I fell in love with the trees. It took a while to realize what was going on. I felt them watching me. I'd catch them seductively swaying in the wind out of the corner of my eyes. I'd walk among them and hear songs. I felt I was going crazy. I knew that was a good thing. They'd tease me with little gifts, an early red leaf in autumn, or a carpet of acorns. They seemed shy, but I knew it was all an act. Their soft suggestions fell on a distracted mind at first, until they entered my dreams. Like wild lovers, they held nothing back. Revealed, denial impossible, all seen. They whispered, "Come and know us. Learn our songs. Taste our medicine, feel our heartbeat, hear our secrets. We will show you our magic." I was born under the willow tree moon. She came to me first to teach me about the ways of water, how to bend and not break. Hawthorne insisted she was next. She showed me how to stand with an open heart. And she promised to use her thorns to stop me from closing my own. Oak joined us and showed me how to stand as I received lightning. In joined the others too, birch and rowan and blackthorn, and on, like an orgy in the forest. We danced naked in the moonlight and soft rain. Now I walk beside my lovers, like a lunatic possessed by the moon, like my ancestors who were mad from the lunar moon. Who knew I would have so much delicious love in one lifetime?
Oh, thank you for that gift. Oh, taking us to the grove, and just the whole time you read that, it just felt like that subtle seductive energy that comes in from the left when you don't quite expect it. And then just you just created this sort of, it's the vortex in the heart, but then also just seeing and being with you in the grove with all the tree siblings and the tree lovers.
I wonder what it would be like. You say that, it comes in from the left, and maybe it's coming from all directions. And there's just sometimes just a little space on the left for it to get in. But that idea that I walk outside and I don't just feel the warmth of the sun, but the sun is actually like kissing me, it's massaging me, it's like being sensual with me. Or when I'm in water, I don't just feel it like buoying me or cleansing me, but that it's like the water's licking my skin. When I put my back against a walking on a mountain, I rest, to take a break, and you just lean against a big old stone, and that can feel like supportive and practical. But what if it was something else? What if there was a relationship there that was beyond that, that was an embrace? And we had this, right? In ancient Ireland, we had the Tara, right? As the stories go, Tara is the site where the Ard-Righ, the High King, was crowned politically. But then they would come to Uisnech to be sort of crowned spiritually. But there was a marrying of the land, but there was a consummation in that. But there was ceremony around that, and that wasn't just a mental exercise or a sort of a pageantry, but that the king would marry and consummate that marriage with the land and the goddess of sovereignty that was in that land. And it's so sensitive and weaving all of this stuff. It's, people are like, what are you talking about? Orgies with trees and, consummating marriages with the land. And like, but there was something that our ancestors were doing that was very, people talk about the Irish being wild. I don't think the Romans apparently, said the Scots and the Irish were too wild to conquer. Not sure we were wild. I think we were free. And then through the colonized mind, which may also be a colonizer, that looks like wildness, but it's just freedom. How do we reclaim that and re free ourselves in this way too, around our eros, whether that's in nature or just our eros with other humans? It's so bottled and constricted and limited.
There's so much in what you said, but I'm going to first gently lift up as you just used another or, right? When we, in placing the either or, it's that sense of that full erotic connection and relationship with the land and with other people. the people around us, right? Because as you name it, it's that sense of, if you can start to look at, we're used to reading texts through a feminist lens or an anti-colonialist lens. Like, what happens when you start to look to the oldest mythologies through an erotic lens? And that understanding, as you name it, like, it is the king's relationship with relations to the land, to the sovereignty goddess, that not only offer him the ability to rule, but it also brings into balance the entire ecosystem between this world and the other world, between human and nature, so that it all gets blended together. And, I just feel like there's an invitation in this too, in that sense of, what if one doesn't have to hear this as, oh, well, in this point in my life, I guess I'm just left to imagining sex with trees. Because my, whether there's that sense of, oh, love has shifted, love has changed, I'm not 22 anymore. Or it's that sense of like, what do you mean? I've got a human lover who has taken over my entire being. But what is it like to fold in all of the time frames and all of the binaries and all of the expectations? And to be in that sort of erotic everything with the everything, it sounds really distracting, but also the most enlivening thing on the planet. Because, as you're talking about walking out in the sunshine and feeling kisses upon your face, like, I guess that's briefly distracting, but isn't it a sense of being more present than ever one ever could be? And maybe you'll leave your phone at home because you're outside, having an embrace.
Because when you go on a date with a human and it's really good, like it's a really good date, there's deep connection, there's whatever, there's just that flow. You don't want to be checking your phone. You just want to be poured into, you want to pour yourself into this person and you want them to pour themselves into you. Like you're filling each other's wine glasses with with each other's presence. And I bet you everybody's had that experience at some point, maybe with a human, more likely with nature at some point. You feel like you're being poured into by nature, and maybe there's a reciprocity of that too. Can we not just be receivers from nature, but can we be generous lovers to nature?
That speaks to a lot of what I feel like is so core to my work right now, which is this sense of really revising and being very careful with the way we use the word and the concept of use. Because in my work, constantly I'm encountering, well, I want to use this myth in order to. And in the same way that we are using, the bog in order to heat a home, obviously, or whether it's pulling the fossil fuels out of the ground or the trees in order to build another mini mart. That sense of checking in with how we're using use across all of our human relationships and our mythical relationships and our natural relationships. And again, how it opens us up to say instead, what is it to be in truest reciprocity?
And as I have continued on my journey of exploring Eros and not just like how it lives in ancestral ways and mythology, but how it lives in me and my body and my life and my expression, one of the things I had to do was go back and look at how I was using myself, right? Not just using others or using a story, but how was I using myself? And I have a shorter thing if you want to hear it about what I wrote on this discovery. It's a forgiveness letter to my body. I feel tender just before I even read it. I'm sorry for the times I've judged you, criticized you, made jokes about you. I'm sorry for when I doubted your wisdom or didn't listen to it. I'm sorry for the times I pushed through pain and hurt you. I'm sorry for the times I didn't say no, or I didn't slow down, or I didn't ask for my needs to be met. I'm sorry for the times I punished you, didn't allow you to be wild or free or experience pleasure. I'm sorry I rushed you. I'm sorry I partnered with people who are not good for you. I'm sorry I hurt you. Please forgive me. Thank you. I love you. I think that, to step into the, to invoke Eros as a force and to invoke and invite it, there's a path of preparation for that too. We don't do a lot of preparing. We do a lot of invoking these days. We don't do a lot of preparing. People say they want liberation. And, Reza Menneke says, we're not ready for liberation. I heard him say that once at a talk. He was like, we're not ready. We're not physically ready. There's a lot of people talking about Eros and sacred sexuality and the power of these things. And there's a lot of people teaching about it these days. And that's all. We need to be looking at these things, I think, as a society, because so much of our pain is because of this disconnection from these powerful, beautiful forces. But we also have to prepare ourselves to be able to receive them and be in right relationship with those forces. And I think for me, one of the steps was just reckoning with that relationship of usury that I had with my body. Not out of a, sense of sort of shame or blame to myself, but just like, oh wow, look, this beautiful body and the ways that I've treated, the ways that I've treated my body, would not be the way I would want anybody to treat me. Or I'd want it to treat any of my best friends or anything like that. And so this place of just like humility and, oh, can I just ask my body for forgiveness? Yeah, it's been a really powerful exercise, and sometimes just a returning to it can be really helpful. Yeah.
Well, I'm so grateful for your words, and I receive them both as your friend, as an individual inside of myself, but also I really felt myself as a parent, really calling those in and wishing those for our children. I'm raising teenage girls at this point. So, that's front and center for me right now, especially in terms of, and I think kind of akin to what you're saying though, and I think it's related, is as we're looking to liberation or sacred sexuality or whatever these kind of dreams that sound like, God, what an amazing buzzword. I want to go to the weekend retreat sort of thing. And yet also, where are the rites of passages and the initiations that call us through to be ready for those at whatever point in life we are approached by them. And so looking to, it's our children and our teens especially who we know all the messages they're getting about their bodies. We know that, essentially self-hatred is in the waters, or it seems like, and what sort of long-term preparation, again, to come back to the ancestral and also the very real and palpable relationship to the land that prepares us to be embodied by ourselves, with another, within community. And again, we have these conversations that feel so deeply aspirational. And yet, also, I just want to thank you for your poem that roots it into, it begins with listening enough to ask for forgiveness. And that intimate small work.
And then, life, spirit wants to flow into empty vessels. But, a vessel that's full of judgment and hate and unkindness towards myself isn't an empty vessel. It's full of those things. Just because there might be longing there doesn't mean it's an empty vessel. And so I think a lot about that of in this work of the more attuning to the Eros that I experience all around is really just about emptying as much as I possibly can. And I think that's so much of what are the real, the very deep spiritual practices. I think that's what the invitation is, and that's what liberation is. This is an emptying exercise, not a filling exercise. It's an emptying first, and then being filled by something beyond ourselves. And then that's where the liberation happens. But to be Yeah, to empty myself so that Eros wants to move through me, through this vessel. That feels like a beautiful way to serve.
Yes. Well, as we get near to landing our conversation, I'm thinking a lot about, Bjaltina is associated so much with fire. It's associated with, cows and the wealth that they provided. But I'm thinking in terms of what you just were saying about that sense of kind of the miracle and mystery of fire and the way that it burns away and also warms us up. I wonder if you have any reflections for us, knowing that, being in ceremony and being with fire is, I think, a key part of who you are, where fire lives for you right now, lives in you, how you gather around it.
Well, that second piece I just wrote came after a fire ceremony, actually at a summer solstice about 5 years ago, and during a very, very painful time in life. And I was sitting around the fire, and it was like my body sort of collapsed on itself. And for 2 hours, I sat there and I just said, "I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry." And I didn't know why I was saying it. There was no story behind it. And it was just sort of spontaneously happening. And then I stood up, and it was like the fire had invoked it. It was like it had sparked that inside of me. And then I stood up and I was like, why am I saying this? And then basically all the things that I wrote were the reasons why. And I think fire has that in me, for me, that yes, it's the warming that you talked about. It's the burning up, but it's, I think now I feel the alchemical medicine of fire very present in life. And our world is alchemizing right now. Now, I don't know which direction it's alchemizing in. We could talk about that for a long time on another day, but there's some great transformation that we are in the middle of, right? And Joanna Macy calls it the great turning, and we need this element of fire, but it also feels very uncomfortable at times, right? Because the heat feels too much. But I remember doing a going on a an Imram, a shamanic style sort of journey, and I was in the journey. There was a volcano, an active volcano. With all the lava, death below, and I was suspended from a rope, and the way the rope was tied around me, any movement, I was hanging upside down, and any movement to move up and untie the rope caused deep pain in my body. So there was nothing I could do except for cut the rope. And so it was cut the rope and drop into the lava, and I was expecting some sort of like death. And what I realized was that I could swim and breathe in lava. And, we talk a lot of people talk about sort of preparing themselves and their families for these times. And I wish we spent more time looking at the internal preparation for these times, not just the external preparation. So lots of amazing friends are like, everybody's really curious about how we grow our own food now in the United States of America, right? Supply chain issues, da, 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 all this kind of stuff, and deep uncertainties. People want to grow food. I'm like, amazing. I want to learn how to grow food too. I can grow a little bit, but not an expert. But very rarely is the conversation about the internal preparation for deep alchemical times. And I think fire is an invitation into that, is an invitation into the alchemy, but the alchemy within, as we go through some sort of external alchemizing. Yeah. And Bjaltin is just perfect. It's like knocking on the door for us right now, time wise. And what could we, maybe as we, sit in a quiet morning, as we approach Bjaltin and we feel the eros of all of life around us, what would be that invocation or that prayer that we might ask for an internal alchemizing of something so that we can move through this world in a different way.
So we can move through the world in a different way. And that just speaks to me of both making new choices but also sitting, as you said, that idea of being an empty vessel, such that new choices can arrive within us, not because we're having our fate decided for us by some cruel hand, but instead that sense of what if I can sit in presence with the all that is, with the understanding that Eros is not necessarily related to erotica and porn. It is instead the everything of how we move through the world, our children move through the world, the ancestors move through the world, and taking that fire inside of ourselves in a in an all that is sort of way.
Because even with the name and, we name and title everything like this is Eros, this is something else. And that's all helpful categorization, but it still creates separation and it's all just life happening, right? And then we put our labels on life and we say, well, this feels like Eros and this feels not like Eros. And but it's all just life ultimately, with just different perfumes and flavors happening at any moment in time. And I think that's the invitation of this wild experiment on planet Earth, is can we just open to life? What would it be to open to life every day and say, here I am. Here I am. Like one of my meditation teachers, like open to life, like you open to an orgasm. Say yes. Say yes. And you will enjoy it much more.
I think, Robert, that might be the perfect place to end on a conversation about Bjaltina and Eros. Yes. Thank you so much for. I never knew where we were going to end after a beginning with mythology and poetry, but thank you for sharing your own words. Thank you for calling, bringing those in. It's such an honor to hold space for those and for you.
So good to be with you again.
You too. Let's do it again soon.
Yeah, for sure.
Thank you for tuning in to Knot Work, Myth, and Storytelling. Please subscribe and review the show on your favorite podcast platform, and do share this episode with other lovers of mythology and story. Want more knot work in your life? Please consider becoming a paid subscriber to my newsletter, The Myth Worker's Hearth, over on Substack. As a paid subscriber, you'll have access to the special new podcast series called Touros, which takes you even deeper into mythology, landscape, and the creative journey. And yes, that's a new name. You may know my newsletter as Myth is Medicine. It's now The Myth Worker's Hearth. Creating this show is a labor of love, and your support will help me continue to craft and share stories throughout this season and beyond. You can find out more about my writing, my book, The Sovereignty Knot, A Woman's Way to Freedom, Power, Love, and Magic, our online writing communities, including the Author's Knot, as well as how to work with me as a writing coach over at my website, marisagowdy.com. Music on the show is by Beth Sweeney and Billy Hardy, a Celtic fiddle and multi-instrumental duo based on Cape Cod, Massachusetts. Find out about their music and shows at billyandbeth.com. My own work is inspired and sourced through a connection to my Irish ancestors. Gratefully, I live, write, work, and record this podcast on the ancestral lands of the Lenape, whose name means original people.